Welcome to International Edition for Friday, July 24th, 2015. I'm David Byrd, reporting from Washington. Coming up, Secretary of State John Kerry faces tough questions about the Iran nuclear deal.
Now, if the U.S. Congress moves to unilaterally reject what was agreed to in Vienna, the result will be the United States of America walking away from every one of the restrictions that we have achieved.
Defense Secretary Carter makes a surprise visit to Iraq, fighting Islamic State on social media, and President Obama heads to Africa. That's all coming up on International Edition. Top Obama administration officials faced tough Senate questioning Thursday on the Iran nuclear deal reached earlier this month in Vienna. It was the first public hearing on the deal, which Congress has to accept or reject by mid-September. Opening the hearing, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's Republican Chairman Bob Corker criticized Secretary of State John Kerry for the terms he secured in negotiating the deal.
From my perspective, Mr. Secretary, I'm sorry. Not unlike a hotel guest that leaves only with a hotel bathrobe on his back, I believe you've been fleeced. In the process of being fleeced, what you've really done here is you have turned Iran from being a pariah to now Congress being a pariah.
Kerry responded by telling lawmakers that rejection of the accord would give Tehran the go-ahead to swiftly accelerate its nuclear program.
Remember that 2 years ago when our negotiations began, we faced an Iran that was enriching uranium up to 20% at a facility that was secret and buried underground. And they were rapidly stockpiling enriched uranium and had installed nearly 20,000 nuclear centrifuges. They were building a heavy water reactor that could produce weapons-grade plutonium at the rate of enough to produce one or two bombs a year. And experts assessed that the breakout time then, as a result, the interval required to rush to be able to produce enough fissile material for one nuclear weapon, was about 2 to 3 months. If this deal is rejected, we return immediately to this reality. Except that the diplomatic support that we have built with all these other countries that we have accumulated would disappear overnight.
Idaho Republican James Risch said that the deal puts an unsafe amount of faith in Iran's willingness to comply with the deal.
When you're dealing with the people that we're dealing with here, with the history they have of cheating and everything else, anyone who can say this is a good deal. I know the justification is, well, it's not perfect. Well, the word perfect shouldn't even be used in a sentence with this agreement. It isn't even close to that.
Ranking Senator Ben Cardin, the top Democrat on the committee, said that he felt that U.S. negotiators had made significant progress.
There were many rumors during these last couple months of what was going to be in this agreement and how it was going to be weakened from the April framework that, in fact, have been strengthened since the April framework.
Secretary Kerry repeated the Obama administration's assertion that the deal negotiated in Vienna is the only viable option to control Iran's nuclear program and to prevent Tehran from acquiring nuclear weapons.
Now, if the U.S. Congress moves to unilaterally reject what was agreed to in Vienna, the result will be the United States of America walking away from every one of the restrictions that we have achieved. And a great big green light for Iran to double the pace of its uranium enrichment, proceed full speed ahead with a heavy water reactor, install new and more efficient centrifuges, and do it all without the unprecedented inspection and transparency measures that we have secured.
Joining Kerry on Capitol Hill were Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz and Treasury Secretary Jack Lew. Congress has 56 days left to review the agreement. If it blocks the deal, President Obama has said he would veto that. It would take a two-thirds majority in both houses of Congress to override a presidential veto. For some world reaction to Secretary Kerry's testimony, we turn to social media correspondent G. Abby Lee. G., what is the world thinking?
Hi, David. Let's begin with Secretary Kerry's tweet. So Wednesday night, he shared a Washington Post article he wrote with Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz. He wrote, "The Iran deal is the only durable, viable option to prevent Iran from having a nuclear weapon." He included the article's link in the tweet, and that's been retweeted about 200 times.
I see Mr. Moniz has also been on Twitter.
That's right. He tweeted about an hour ago that Congress should judge the Iran deal on its scientific and technical parameters. I'm confident they block every pathway to a nuclear weapon. He's on Twitter at Ernest Moniz, and his last name is spelled M-O-N-I-Z. But perhaps more interesting than today's tweet is the one that's been pinned, which means that tweet shows up on top of his Twitter page. So Secretary Moniz wrote on July 14th, "The Iran deal is based on hard science. Our nuclear experts and national labs helped shape the negotiations with rigorous technical analysis." That tweet has been retweeted more than 700 times.
And there's the hashtag, hashtag Iran deal that's been used. Now, is it still widely used?
Well, say it's getting a steady flow of attention. So the formal name for the Iran deal is the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which was, as you know, signed in Vienna on July 14th. Now, if you look at the social media analytics website Topsy, the use of hashtag Iran became more frequent since the 12th and exponentially rose on the next day. More than 200,000 tweets used that hashtag on the 14th, the day of the announcement, and since the 15th, that hashtag was used around 25,000 times a day on average. David?
All right, thanks a lot, G. We welcome your questions or comments. You can send us a tweet at VOA_IE. You can also log on to our website, voanews.com, and post your reactions there. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, we'll look at President Obama's trip to Africa, and Taylor Swift and Nicki Minaj are friends again. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter made an unannounced visit Thursday to Iraq, saying he wanted a first-hand look at U.S. and Iraqi efforts to thwart the advances of Islamic State militants. As the insurgents had overrun Ramadi, the Anbar provincial capital, in May, Carter complained that Iraqi troops showed no will to fight. But at the first stop of a day-long visit, the American defense chief praised Iraqi counterterrorism efforts and the troops that carry them out as he watched their maneuvers at a firing range. Carter told Iraqi counterterrorism commanders that Iraq's forces had, in his words, performed so very well, so bravely. He acknowledged that Iraq's military had suffered losses and said it was very clear to U.S. leaders that Iraq has a capable military. Meanwhile, U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation Director James Comey said that the Islamic State's online recruiting efforts pose a bigger threat than al-Qaeda. Speaking late Wednesday at the annual Aspen Security Forum in Colorado, Comey warned of the extremist group's intensifying social media campaign. He said Islamic State-linked Twitter accounts have about 21,000 English-language followers, hundreds or thousands of whom are in the United States. The FBI has hundreds of open investigations involving Americans who might have become radicalized and wanted to carry out terror attacks. International Edition's Jeffrey Young spoke with associate political scientist Colin Clark of the RAND Corporation about Director Comey's remarks. Clark said that Islamic State uses social media as both a recruiting tool and a way of intimidating its opponents.
So ISIS actually has a fairly sophisticated use of social media. As we've seen, the group uses it to broadcast things like beheadings, as it did with several Westerners that it had kidnapped. But it also uses Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook to show its humanitarian efforts, including fighters handing out ice cream cones to children in an attempt to appeal to its own constituents. So here we're talking about the use of social media not only to recruit and attract followers, but also to intimidate the West, and at the same time galvanize support from among its constituency.
This is a pretty sophisticated use of PSYOPs, psychological operations, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And ISIS has also produced several popular web series, including titles such as The Knights of Martyrdom and Risen Alive. And these emphasize the camaraderie of jihad by shelling militants fighting together on the battlefield. There's also ISIS's magazine, Dabiq, which is an English language production used to help more and more recruits.
FBI Director James Comey said that the Islamic State is willing to engage what he called unstable, troubled drug users, while al-Qaeda is much more selective about who that they recruit. Now, what does the Islamic State gain by going to such people?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think Director Comey is right that al-Qaeda is a bit more parsimonious in who they use to recruit. Part of that's due to, the fear of infiltration, of having individuals infiltrate the group. For ISIS, the real concern is if these individuals can't make it from the West or from the region to the battlefield, it is then saying, here, try and attack in your own home country as almost a way to vet these people to see how serious they are.
Comey also said that the Islamic State's recruitment effort through social media has really enlarged, really ramped up in the last 2 months or so. Can you offer any explanation as to why all of a sudden they're really pumping hard on this?
Yeah, so I think it has to do with perhaps the effectiveness of the airstrikes. They're losing a lot of fighters on the battlefield. And unlike terrorist groups in the past, ISIS actually controls large swaths of territory, sanctuary, and safe haven. So in order to control this territory, they need the bodies. So combined with the fact that they're losing individuals in large droves, they then have to replace those individuals to control the territory.
If you were advising the U.S. government on effective response strategies to mitigate this recruitment effort, what would you recommend?
To me, it comes down to allocation of resources. We need to get serious and devote more resources to the problem. I don't know if that comes in the form of a task force, some kind of high-level panel, but we really need to focus, and I'm not saying divert these resources from the kinetic option, because that still has to be a big piece of this, but we also need to put our money where our mouth is and devote resources to standing up a more robust effort at targeting ISIS on social media.
That was RAND Corporation Associate Political Scientist Colin Clark speaking with International Edition's Jeffrey Young. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, President Obama travels to Africa, a Russian space capsule reaches the International Space Station, and what were Spartans doing in Beijing? U.S. President Barack Obama travels to Ethiopia and Kenya this week, the homeland of his father, as he highlights growth in American economic links with sub-Saharan Africa. He arrives in Kenya on Friday, where he will attend the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in Nairobi. Jack Leslie is the head of the government-funded U.S. Africa Development Foundation, which works with the underserved in Africa. He says that helping growth on the continent is in the long-term interests of the United States.
Africa, to give you a sense, only gets about 3% of foreign direct investment. So helping these engines of growth and these enterprises that are really creating jobs is incredibly important, and they're good investments.
Leslie says that the African market is booming with new businesses making strides in technology and entrepreneurial activity.
There's talk of the Silicon Savannah in East Africa, which is really showing amazing leaps in mobile technology. I mean, in many ways, the Kenyans are way ahead of us in the United States on mobile banking, for example.
USADF is also teaming with large U.S. corporations like General Electric to give Africans greater access to power. GE Africa President and CEO Jay Ireland says the continent offers tremendous opportunity for investment and growth.
The economic growth of the countries are going to be absolutely critical to have power. And they need that to attract manufacturing. They need that to whether it's mines or oil rigs or shopping centers or whatever. They need electricity. So you're looking at a significant deficit of power across the range of countries.
Last month, President Obama signed a 10-year extension of Kenya's main trade authority with Africa, a 15-year effort that boosted U.S.-Africa trade to $73 billion last year. U.S. exports accounted for slightly more than half of that total. More than 40 sub-Saharan countries are eligible for trade benefits under the law through which most imports from Africa enter the United States duty-free. Two of the main beneficiaries are oil exporters Angola and Nigeria. But even as U.S. trade with Africa has grown, it trails China, which now invests $200 billion annually in the continent. The European Union also is better than the U.S. They have $140 billion worth of investment. The U.S. says the Africa trade measure supports an estimated 350,000 jobs. As the trade extension advanced in Congress, U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman and National Security Advisor Susan Rice said it provided vital economic opportunities and helped African companies become more competitive while opening the path for more investments in them. Coming up, the U.S. men's soccer team suffers a surprising defeat and a pop star spat ends. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at voanews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. A Russian Soyuz...
Now inside about 3 meters...
A Russian Soyuz capsule has landed at the International Space Station after a two-month delay following the failure of an unmanned cargo ship. Officials said the capsule reached the orbiting laboratory Thursday, less than 6 hours after its launch from the Baikonur base in Kazakhstan. Officials at the U.S. space agency NASA say the Soyuz orbited the Earth 4 times before docking at the ISS. Launch of the manned mission to the space station was delayed after the April failure of an unmanned cargo freighter that was supposed to deliver supplies to the space station crew. American Chell Lindgren, Russian Oleg Kononenko, and Japan's Kimiya Yui joined 2 Russians and an American aboard the space station. NASA says that all 6 crew members will remain on the ISS until December. Scott Kelly, one of the astronauts already on board, and Kononenko are taking part in the first year-long mission aboard the International Space Station. It's an experiment designed to study the effects of long-term spaceflight on the human body. They are scheduled to return to Earth in March after 342 days living in space. A group of foreigners dressed as Spartan warriors as part of a publicity stunt for a local restaurant got arrested by Chinese police. The group of about 40 bare-chested young men dressed in brown cloaks, loincloths, sandals, and shin guards was delivering salads this week to Beijing office workers as part of a promotion. They quickly drew the attention of passersby who snapped pictures showing the warriors shouting and standing in pyramid formation. The stunt also rattled Beijing police, who were seen in photos restraining the shirtless young men on the ground as they made the arrests in the upscale Sanlitun district. The state-run People's Daily said Wednesday the group was taken away by police for affecting public order. It did not elaborate. The U.S. men's soccer team suffered a stunning 2-1 defeat Wednesday to Jamaica in the CONCACAF Gold Cup tournament in Atlanta, Georgia. The Jamaicans got first-half goals from Darren Mattox and Giles Barnes to silence the crowd and shock the heavily favored Americans in the biennial regional tournament. Michael Bradley scored for the U.S. men 3 minutes into the second half, but the defending Gold Cup champions got no more goals. It is only the second time that Jamaica has beaten the U.S. team in 23 attempts. The Jamaicans also became the first Caribbean team to advance to the tournament final. They'll face Mexico, which defeated Panama 2-1 in the other semifinal. The U.S. will play Panama in the third-place game. An online spat between pop superstars Taylor Swift and Nicki Minaj has ended. The high-profile conflict even drew in other pop stars, including Katy Perry and Rihanna. I spoke with VOA's Top 5 Countdown host Ray McDonald about what happened, why it happened, and how it ended.
It all started humbly enough on July 21st when Nicki Minaj said, hey, where's my Video of the Year nomination for Anaconda? And she felt that she'd been passed over, and she made a comment that the media seemed to have double standards when it comes to females, that African Americans were held to a different standard. They were shunted aside, put on an urban award shows, and that why wasn't she in the center stage when white performers doing the same things got all the recognition. She didn't name any names.
My anaconda don't, my anaconda don't, my anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, hun.
Boy, toy named Troy used to live in Detroit. Big, 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 big money. He was getting some coins. Was the shootouts with the law, but he lived in a...
And as I said, that feud ended when Taylor Swift tweeted an apology on Thursday, saying that she misunderstood Nicki Minaj and they are friends again. It's always good when two high-profile, highly paid, beautiful women don't fight over the internet.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
According to human rights organizations and Chinese activists, in recent weeks, Chinese authorities have systematically detained, arrested, subjected to forced disappearance, held incommunicado, or questioned and released 169 lawyers, legal staff, and activists involved in peacefully challenging official policies in China. Chinese authorities detained lawyers from several law firms, including six from the Beijing Feng Rei firm. The Feng Rei law firm handled a number of high-profile human rights cases, including the case of jailed Uyghur scholar Ilham Tohati. The crackdown began on July 9th when Feng Rei lawyer Wang Yu disappeared after alerting friends via a text message that her internet connection and electricity had been cut off and that people were trying to break into her home. Wang had represented several clients involved in human rights activism or religious freedom issues, including practitioners of Falun Gong, a religious group banned in China. The firm's director, Zhu Shifeng, was also detained. He had represented Zhang Miao, a Chinese journalist who'd reported on the Hong Kong democracy protests. Among those who have not been heard from since being detained is well-known lawyer Lu Heping. He represented fellow lawyer and blind activist Chen Guangcheng and helped victims of forced evictions. The United States is deeply concerned that the broad scope of China's new national security law is being used as a legal facade to commit human rights abuses. The U.S. strongly urges China to respect the rights of all its citizens and to release all those who have recently been detained for seeking to protect the rights of Chinese citizens.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.